Hey guys, I'm here to tell you about a great event coming up next week. The Austin Music Foundation presents The Media and Their Madness, a panel where great writers dish on how to get your story told. The event takes place on Wednesday, September 2nd from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the KUTX Studio 1A. It will be moderated by Heather Wagner-Reed, a fabulous publicist, and includes panelists from the Austin American-Statesman, KGSR, KUTX, and the Austin Business Journal. Simply go to austinmusicfoundation.org for more info. That is the Austin Music Foundation presents The Media and Their Madness.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Mowdy.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today, guys. Kevin Peroni from the band Wiretree is here. You might know this band from all of their albums. They just re-released their first album, Bolden, which is available on vinyl. Came out in 2007 originally. And it was the album that kind of put them on the map, man. So they re-released it on vinyl, and I saw that they had re-released it, and they're doing some stuff. And I think this band is incredible. I love the music. So I got a hold of Kevin, and I was like, hey, man, come over. Let's do this thing. And so he was like, yeah, sure. And we had a great conversation. They're, you know, an amazing band. And my friend Daniel's playing drums with them now. Love Daniel. All right, so look forward to that. That's coming up in just a minute. My conversation with Kevin Peroni from Wiretree. First, let me tell you what's going on with me. I want to remind you guys that on Wednesday, September 9th, from 8 to 10 p.m. at the Townsend, right here in Austin, Texas, we are doing a live episode of How Did I Get Here with my guests, Miles Zuniga from Fastball, Kathy Valentine, Emily Bell, and Amy Edwards. It's going to be a great show. We're going to have a great conversation, have a good time. Come on out. It's free, no charge. They have great cocktails and great snacks over there at the Townsend and a great room for the podcast. It's a room separated from the bar, so it's its own place, but they got waiter people coming in there bringing you your drinks, bringing you your snacks, doing your thing. So come on out September 9th from 8 to 10 at the Townsend right here in Austin, Texas. All right? I just saw Kathy last night. I went to this birthday party for Amy Edwards, who's also going to be on the thing. I played some songs with her. AJ Vallejo played, Kendall Beard played, Bruce Castleberry played. A lot of people played, got up and jammed. I had a really good time. Zuri came out, and, you know, we just had a good time. It was a good night. Good night. Great birthday. Congratulations to Amy. All right. I'm going to go on her podcast. She's got a podcast called The Real Show that's going to be airing in September. It's going to start coming out in September. And I'm going next week to do an episode with her. Okay. I'm also going to, I think I'm the voice of the intro for her show, which might be interesting, huh? I'm branching out, guys. I'm doing voiceovers for intros of other people's podcasts. I didn't even do the one for mine. That's a robot voice. That is. That's a voice that I wrote in all that stuff, and you get a computer voice to say it. And that one sounded like a radio announcer to me. And I thought it was kind of funny. And look at this. 4 years later, it's still the intro voice for my show. All right, so yeah, come on out to the live podcast September 9th. What else is going on? I'm off this weekend. I'm going to go to that Penelope Spheris screening, which I'm excited about. Yes, yes, yes. I'm going swimming at my friend Joe G's house. I'm going to be talking to Joe King Carrasco for the podcast. Look for that soon. Joe King Carrasco, man. Jesse Sublett's coming back. We're going to talk about his 60s gangster book. So yeah, I'm excited about that. Ooh, also, my friend Corey Baum. You can find him on Facebook under Corey Baum Wins, and also his band Croy and the Boys, who are, they have a Kickstarter that ends on Saturday, September 5th, and they're using that Kickstarter to make an album with the great producer Adrian Quesada, and they need to make their goal, or they're not going to be able to put out their record. So tell you what, why don't we talk to Corey Baum right now from Croy and the Boys and find out what you can do to help them with their Kickstarter. Corey Baum, Corey and the Boys going in to make their first album, the first real album. That's what you say on your Kickstarter video, right?
Yes.
You're doing
yes,
it for real.
Right. How's it feel?
No, you're doing it for real.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
The real deal.
And you're working with the great Adrian Quesada?
Uh-huh.
whose acting in your Kickstarter video is unbelievable. Like I if I was making a mafia movie and I needed a guy to intimidate people, I would put him in it. Are you
that's
excited?
What he's there for. If you don't donate, if you don't pledge, that's what you're dealing with.
So you have a Kickstarter campaign that ends on Saturday, September 5th. So people need to get out there and support Croy and the boys. Tell me about this album.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. When I say it's our first real album, I've never recorded with the band who I've been playing live with, and I've never recorded with a producer. I've done a lot of just kind of like with friends, acting as engineers in home studios. So this is like the first real go with kind of the actual live band and you know, seeking outside input and help and creating the sounds that we want.
Right.
I chose Adrian. I really wanted to get, you know, we're making country music, but we're kind of coming at country from a different angle, I think. And I think it's similar to the way that Adrian has approached a lot of the Latin music that he works on. And that's what first attracted me to him. And I just wanted fresh sounds. And so I was kind of thinking outside of the box, outside of the country Americana vein.
Yeah, you were thinking outside the box.
What's that?
You were thinking outside the box.
I was trying to think outside the box. Exactly, yeah.
So
lately I've been, you know, I work landscaping and stuff. I work with a lot of Mexican dudes there, and I've just been really exposed to a lot more norteño and banda and just kind of Tejano music. Been really influenced by it. Always loved the Texas Tornadoes and stuff like that. So I was excited to be working with someone that has a background in, you know, Adrian's from Laredo, plays Latin music now, so I'm really looking to get some of those influences. I think I'd be going out of my way to ignore those influences at this point, living and working in Texas. So I'm excited to have that kind of sound on the record.
That's awesome. So who is the band that you have playing with you?
I have Casey Seymour playing drums, Amy Hawthorne on bass.
I like Amy. I've known her for a long time, actually.
She's great.
Yeah.
I love her.
Sorry, who's on guitar?
She's awesome. What's that?
Who's on guitar?
Steve Carlson,
oh,
who
awesome.
Also plays guitar with Leo Rondeau.
Yeah.
So I play bass in that band. And then Dan Patrivedo is playing Wurlitzer, and he is a phenomenal musician. He moved down here a couple years ago from Chicago. He's really got an incredible year. He's
yeah.
A great writer, so.
Is he the guy playing the piano at the White Horse in the video?
That's right. Yep,
yeah.
That's him.
Well, look, I think everyone needs to get out there, and they can find you in all different ways. One of them is going on Facebook and going to Croy and the Boys, or they can go to your personal Facebook page. You accept all friends, like your friend Jazz Mills, or our friend Jazz Mills. Accepts all friends.
Everyone's friend, Jazz Mills.
Corey Baum Wins is your Facebook handle. And also there's badboycroy.com, and you're on Facebook at badboycroy. So let's talk about some of the incentives that people get when they donate to your Kickstarter. What do they get in return?
Well, there's a lot of the typical stuff, you know. I mean, $25, you'll get a copy of the record, a physical and a download copy. Then from there, I've got it's $75. I'm going to make a very special run of T-shirts that only people that $75 will get, so it'll be a very limited edition T-shirt. Plus, we'll get the record. All levels come with a copy of the record, which is the main thing is the music, of course. But let's see, at $100, you'll get a free solo show from me. I'll come to your house, come to your party, whatever. If you want to throw a party at a bar, whatever, I'll play it. For $500, you get the whole band. And then at $500 and $1,000, you get a tour of Austin, Texas, from the back of my motorcycle. I will take you around town and show you the city the way I see it.
That's what I want to see, man. Well, look, dude, you know, at this point, I've known you for a long time. How long have I known you? Like
true.
6 or 7 years or something?
Or so. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I guess 5 years. It seems like longer. You've always been such a great guy, and your music is so great. Like, you're such a great songwriter. I just saw you and Jazz play at the Solstice Fest a couple months ago. And that was great. People can find out where you're playing by going to Croy and the Boys on Facebook.
Or like I said, my personal page, just because Facebook just charges for everything that you do on the band pages. So I've kind of just, I do it sometimes, but, yeah, Corey Baum wins. My personal page, definitely, I end up using that a lot more just because I feel like it gets more reach, so.
Well, good. Well, people get out there, and this campaign ends on Saturday, September 5th. Help Croy and the boys make their album. Is there a title yet for this album?
No, we're not there yet.
Okay.
We're really looking to, like I said, the main band, like I said, is kind of straight ahead, but we're going to be incorporating a lot of sounds that we don't usually have. There's going to be a lot of accordion, for sure, maybe some different percussion sounds. Maybe I really am really getting into the brass sounds on a lot of Mexican music, so there might be some brass. So anyways, I think the sound has a lot to, has a long way to go, and we'll let that determine what the name of the album is. I have no idea yet.
Okay. Well, everyone get out there and support Corey and the boys. Corey Baum is
Please.
A fantastic dude. Go to Corey Baum Wins on Facebook. That is his personal Facebook page. Like him. You'll find out when he's playing. You'll find out when the album will be coming out. And once again, you have until Saturday, September 5th to give to this Kickstarter campaign, a worthwhile campaign.
Oh,
what?
I should mention, I almost forgot that this Saturday, so
tomorrow,
I guess.
Yeah.
Saturday the 29th, we are throwing a fundraiser for the Kickstarter at Hard Luck Lounge. And we will be playing a set at 9 p.m. Local legend Country Willie will be playing before us. He's an amazing songwriter from the Nacogdoches area. So if you have nothing else going on Saturday night, please come out. And the proceeds of that will be going to our Kickstarter.
Hard Luck Lounge, 9 p.m. Get out there Saturday the 29th. That's tomorrow.
That's right.
Get out there and get involved. Help out Corey. Hey, man, you're fantastic. I love talking to you. Is there anything I'm missing?
Likewise. I think that's it. I think we covered it.
All right. Well, you guys break a leg in the studio. I know it's going to be great. I love Adrian. I love you. You guys are going to make some magic. And we'll come back on the show when it's ready to come out, and we'll do a thing.
Thanks so much, Johnny. I love you, too. Thanks for reaching out.
I told her I'd do. Get out there and support Croy and the boys. Help them out on their Kickstarter. And if you're in Austin, go out tomorrow night, Saturday, August 29th, at the Hard Luck Lounge at 9 p.m. Proceeds will be going to their Kickstarter. Croy and the boys, get out there. At least watch the film. It is very funny. He's very funny, and he's very cool. Okay? All right. Let's get to our conversation with Kevin Peroni from Wire Tree. I hope that you guys all have a great weekend. You're out there doing stuff. There's always a million things going on everywhere, probably. I hope in your town there's as much going on as there is in Austin, because if you're not in Austin, because there really is so much. There's so much stuff that sometimes I'm like a deer in the headlights, and I just stay at home. Stay at home mom. Stay at home John. All right, let's talk to Kevin Peroni from Wire Tree. I hope that all of you have a great, great weekend, a party weekend. I'm about to talk to Joe King Carrasco, so I'm getting warmed up. All right, let's talk to Kevin Peroni from Wire Tree. Have a great weekend. Let's get down. Get up, I know you found a way. Head up, look through those clouds of gray.
Yeah.
So you're from here?
I'm from Corpus Christi.
Oh, yeah.
I was born in McAllen, Texas. Of course, I don't remember any of that. My dad was an air-conditioned mechanic. And McAllen, he was just out of the service. And then I popped out in McAllen, and I was there for like a couple years, I guess. And then they decided they're going to move to Corpus, and they did. And we lived in a trailer for like 10 years, and then we still lived in Corpus, and then I went to school there, went to Flower Bluff. I'm a bluff rat. They call them bluff rats there. Well, I don't know. If you're from Corpus, you got this place close to the Laguna Madre, which is this other, it's called Flower Bluff, and then it's a little bit separated by water there, and then it goes into Corpus Christi.
Okay.
And so anyway, basically I'm from Corpus Christi.
Is that where the Lex is?
Yeah, Lexus is over there. It's Corpus Christi, like proper. Like there's a
okay.
There's a place called Ocean Drive where Farrah Fawcett used to live, and all these.
Yeah,
it's just a weird place. It's
do you
it's
by chance? Oh no, you were young there.
Well, in Corpus, I was there up till like 18, 19.
Oh, did you know a guy
actually
named
20.
Did you play?
No, but you know what? I saw you play.
You did?
Well, I tried to, but I was too young, and I was well not
no no, no it's okay.
I was like 17 or 18, okay. Or I was 17 or 18, but it was Skyrocket. It was Rocket Baby,
Mr. Rocket Baby.
Mr. Rocket Baby.
Okay.
It was like the first show that I was like, and I didn't get to go
was
in there.
Was it a cantina?
It was in some, like a shopping mall.
Oh, yeah. I remember he had that, JJ had that place.
Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't even, at the time, you know, the only thing I played was like keyboards and trumpet, and I didn't even play guitar really yet. But anyway, so I was just walking around, and my mom lived off of that area. My parents were divorced, and so I was just walking around. I heard some music out of a club. And I said, "This actually sounds pretty good," and because
thanks,
it's really kind of hard to in Corpus Christi. It was a hard time to find any music that I even liked. It was always like some.
Oh yeah, that place is.
Yeah. So. Especially, so it was really cool because you had this like power pop sound or whatever it was, and I was wow, this actually sounds something a little different than what I'm used to hearing here. So
right.
I peeked in and I hung out outside because I couldn't get in, because I was just well never mind, but yeah because I wasn't drinking age or whatever it was.
Right.
So but I hung out there and listened and poked my head in,
that's
saw
awesome.
You, but I had no idea who you were or
right.
But I you know. But then I started looking you up a little bit because everybody looks each other up nowadays, I guess.
Right, right.
And then I recognized the name. Holy shit! I saw these dudes when I was. I mean, I didn't really see you guys, but I
heard you guys. Yeah, that's flattering. Cool.
So
Corpus, man, the Mecca.
Yep.
So then you moved to Austin after that.
Yeah. So my little short story was, I went to Del Mar College there,
okay.
Which is their community college, and. I got a scholarship playing the trumpet in high school, and I found out that I was not going to do a whole lot playing the trumpet. I wasn't, you know, you're either like phenomenal, like ninja, or you're just like pretty good, or you suck. And I was like pretty good, and I won a lot of competitions, but you have to be like really, really good if you're going to really make it. So I came to the conclusion that I'm not that good. And so, but I was pretty good at computers, and so I moved on over to computers and took some computer classes and changed my major and all that good stuff. And then, you know, I didn't never really finish. I mean, I got a lot of credits in, but then I started getting some sort of jobs for the local school system there to help like fix their computers and just do stuff with them. And then I was also working at South Texas Music Mart, which is like a little music store that sold a lot of band instruments.
Uh-huh.
And then they also sold keyboards, and that's where I got to get into some keyboards and stuff. And then from then on, I was ready to go. I need to go to Austin, maybe try to find a computer job or something like that. Just get out of Corpus. Somehow get out of Corpus. And you don't really realize where you're at until you actually move somewhere. So, moved to Austin and, just been here since, what is it, 1998 or so?
Wow.
Yeah, about that.
So did you move here and start working?
Yeah. I set up a temp job. They have these temp jobs for computers. Like do all sorts of weird stuff. Like just work at Dell and, assemble computers, like really just kind of build the stations for the assemblers to build the computers. So you just like, you put them together and then you help make their little manufacturing section and then you move on over to somewhere else.
Okay.
And so I did odd jobs like that. So you have a 6-week assignment. Then you go to IBM, you'd set up some office and do some stuff. And then you're there for like 2 months. Then, well, this is, you know, kid Kevin, you know, with not a whole lot of experience. So they just, you know, assigned me to things like that.
Right.
So.
I think someone's here. Hi, Zuri.
Hi.
This is Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Zuri.
Nice to
Nice to meet you. So anyways, so basically, moved to Austin. Did a lot of those temp jobs. I was going hopping left and right.
Were you playing at all? What was going on?
No, I didn't even start. So as far as the music goes, like, that was my way of, I didn't really have a whole lot of friends in Corpus or anything like that. So I just hung out in my, I lived in the back of this, these people's house. It was basically like a maid's quarters, and it was separated, and it was like a cinder block.
Yeah.
And so I rented that place out for like $250 when I was going to Del Mar College. Yeah. I bought a drum set, I bought acoustic guitar, had like one of those Tascam little
four tracks. Yeah.
And I was just recording stuff.
The music that you make, you mm-hmm. sound like a guy that came from four track.
Yeah, basically.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Uh-huh. I'm one of those guys.
Yeah. I feel that too. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the people that I relate to,
yeah,
you could just you pretty much trace back to where they came from. They were doing four track stuff.
Yeah. Trying to be the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically.
What were you listening to? Like what?
Back then?
Yeah. Like when you were back there trying to learn the stuff and doing the four track stuff, what was getting what was getting you going?
I went through a lot of phases, but I definitely hit the Beatles at a later age, probably like 15. And I had a friend at school that introduced me to his dad's Beatle collection. And then I just ate it up like crazy. But before that, my sister, she also played trumpet, and she's 8 years older than me. But when I was a kid, I found her all her old records and everything, and I started playing them. It was like Mamas and Papas, Mamas mm-hmm. and the Papas, yeah. like Monday, and yeah. The Cars and all that stuff. And
yeah.
I totally ate that up, because really the Cars are really Beatle influence.
Oh, yeah.
It's just new yeah. wavy and,
sure.
you know, different. It's synth pop Beatles stuff. And just went on from there. And then my mom always liked Roy Orbison and Everly Brothers. And
that's what I heard that cover on.
Oh yeah,
SoundCloud. It's yeah. great. Is that just you?
It's me and there's a guy from the Lennings, Jason Silverberg. We decided let's do a duo. Let's do a thing.
Yeah.
I played all the instruments and then I had him sing one harmony. I sing the rest. And I was just, I had a. You need to get that?
No, sorry. I'm in the middle of a podcast.
Okay. So I just thought that we'd do something together and it's all right.
No, I'm just getting it to stop vibrating. The
sound. Yeah, so those are the things. And then I got into ELO later on. I turned into a Jeff Lynn Freak and Electric Light Orchestra and the Traveling Wilburys and everything to do with him.
Yeah.
He was producing Roy Orbison. This was after the Beatle phase, and then I just ran every Beatle song into the ground.
Then
and
you start album. Going up to going to the people that sound like him, you get into
exactly.
Badfinger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Badfinger and all that. And then
Big Star.
But I really did stick with Jeff Lynn for a while because I just liked his production. He's one of those playing the four track when he was a kid. You know, kind yeah. of thing, or and then some, you know, and he recorded all he played all his instruments, he had all his harmonies.
Are you a fan of The Move?
Oh, yeah, Roy Wood, and Jeff was part of that. And then there was another band called The Idle Race, Jeff was a part of that was before all of that, and that was his first band.
So you're you're deep into it, you know, we did on with Skyrocket like uh-huh. some years back, like. I guess 8 years ago or something, we did a ELO thing with the Tosca String Quartet.
I wish I would have saw that.
Yeah, it was really good.
That's really cool.
It was really hard. It was really hard. It was hard.
There's a lot of parts, yeah.
There's a lot of parts, man. A lot of vocals, a lot of singing through, you know?
A lot of harmonies.
Yeah, we still do, like, Turn to Stone.
That's cool.
Yeah, and Do Ya.
Yeah,
but... Those other ones, you really do need the strings. Like, you know, it makes a huge difference to have that a live string quartet.
Yeah, there's an album that he did. It's called Time, from like the 80s, probably 88 or maybe 84. I don't know, somewhere around there. But That's really cool. He had a lot of different phases. So he had his little disco sounding phase, or like a Don't Bring Me Down stuff.
And, oh yeah, we used to do that.
And then also like he wrote that song for Olivia Newton-John was Xanadu and all that. And then you kind of go into this 80s thing, like Calling America and...
What's the one... they're all the Xanadu songs, like All Over the World.
Yeah, all that stuff. And then he goes in later on, and then he has this... He produced, like, George Harrison's album, right. Cloud Nine.
Yeah.
And then he starts his Traveling Wilbury sound with his... Whatever.
Yeah.
And then he applies that to Roy Orbison and Tom Petty and all of that stuff with Full Moon Fever and, Running Down a Dream and and all those, and I Won't Back Down. And he co-wrote all of those, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Petty.
And then didn't he do that record with Into the Great Wide Open? Yeah.
He did that. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
You're a good drum set. I should have you over to do some loops for me. if you're into it.
Yeah. I love playing.
That was a good kick drum sound, by the way. It wasn't as low as...
Yeah.
Do you do that on your stuff at all? You ever do it?
I haven't really... What I do it for is...
I mean, not like in a Justin Timberlake kind of way, but like just...
No.
As a rhythm track.
I do it when I, I use my phone as a scratch pad. So if I'm driving around and I'm trying to write it, sometimes songs come to your head and you do some melodies, but if sometimes you can base a song around the drums, and then I'll be like, and then I'll get the whole thing down. I'll make a little scratch, just so I can remember what I was doing, and then I'll make a melody on top of that or whatever. But and with our traffic, you can do anything. Well, you can't do anything. In your traffic, you just get stuck into this, like, what am I doing with my life? I'm in this car. And so I just turn on the...
Are you still working computer jobs?
Yeah, I work at Seton Medical Center and the laboratory. And I haven't been with the lab the whole time. But I was with the IT department, then they got bought out with the other people, outsourced. Then... I ended up working for the lab because I knew the director, and then I just basically do support for them, like just help support their lab system and all the chemistry analyzers and everything that has to hook up and test the blood and test the urine and all that stuff, and it sends all that stuff to a server, and the server has to send it to this place so that everybody else can look it up and blah blah blah. So I just kind of troubleshoot that stuff.
Okay.
I've been working at that particular deal for about 6 years, and then before that was Seton, like as a normal IT tech / server person / network, and I just moved all the way around. Just kind of self-taught stuff.
Are they understanding of your band life?
Yeah.
They're
pretty cool about it. If there's like a really good opportunity, then...
Like this festival in China you played a couple years ago.
That was really cool. But yeah, and something like that. Luckily, I saved up some PTO for that, and we were only gone for about a week, week and a half. So it wasn't too crazy. But I got into the habit, at least for those past few years, to sort of just hoard up some PTO time.
What
just
does
in
PTO
case.
Mean? I don't mean.
Oh, it's paid time off.
Okay.
PTO. It's basically like you know, if the longer you don't work, then the more PTO you accrue, and
right.
then, the longer, but whatever. It's the machine, basically. No.
Right. So wait, you just re-released Bolden. That was your first record, critically acclaimed. All your records have been pretty well received critically.
Pretty good, yeah.
I should say, yeah. Uh-huh. I didn't read anything that said, man, this is stinks.
Yeah,
this
right.
fucking guy out of here.
Yeah.
Send him back to Corpus.
Right. No, please.
You're going to be playing, what's the place there? Surf.
Oh, Executive Surf Club?
Yeah.
I used to eat their hamburgers when I was a kid.
So you just re-released that last month? Or a couple
yeah, that
ago?
Was, the point of that was to try out the vinyl thing.
Yeah.
Because everybody's doing the vinyl thing. And for one thing, me and my wife, which is in the band, Rachel's in the band. She plays bass. And we had a little boy.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And he'll be two in November of this year. So these past 2 years have been just baby time. And I usually put out an album every couple of years.
Yeah.
But this time it's not going to be a new album. But it's, you know, a little trade-off. But I it's perfect for me because I did four albums. And I got a lot out of what I needed to do out of my system before I could sort of settle down and kind of go, you know what? It's baby time. I'm being Mr. Dad here. And by the way, it's like, you never feel like you're growing up until you have a baby. I feel like
that's
I could.
I don't have a baby. I'm scared to have to grow up.
It's
man
tough.
Up. I want a little kid down.
I know. It's nice being a kid.
So at that point, you have this kid and you're.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking,
changes.
Well, what I figured is, and that's, you know, I got some stuff in some movies and some shows and whatever. And I'm real, really fortunate with Tom Vail helping out with that. And I got really fortunate with that. So those are things that happen that I could actually sort of work on. Now that I wasn't really writing a whole lot of new music at the time, I was able to set up this whole vinyl thing, try to push my music to other sources and try to get it going in other ways, you know, try to be creative about that. And that seemed to work pretty good. But at the same time, I snuck out a couple songs throughout the past couple of years. And not released them, but wrote them. And
like the one you sent me?
Yeah.
That's gorgeous, man.
Thanks yeah, a lot.
Absolutely.
My plan with those, I have, I'm just going to just release singles for the near future.
Okay.
And I'm just going to probably just release them maybe once every month or once every couple months.
Okay.
And then maybe after it hits like three singles, then I'll release them all out as an EP or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm just going to take my time with them and try to make them as best as I can. And hopefully people will look forward to the next release as they come out like that. And I guess I'm going to try that. Why not?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Man.
So
So is Daniel playing drums with you?
Yeah, Jones is playing.
Yeah, that's my man.
I had to think a little bit because we also have another drummer. His name is Daniel Blanchard.
Uh-huh.
And he plays with Sweet Spirit.
Oh yeah, they're coming on soon.
Yeah. And so he was real busy with that band, and Jones and I knew each other for a long time. He's been on a lot of the songs.
Oh really?
A lot of the albums.
That's great.
And
I love that guy.
I love him too. Him and I go to Home Slice, and we just shoot the bull. And basically, I'm just an earpiece because he has the greatest stories.
Yeah,
I just sit there and just listen to him.
Dude, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Next time you do that, will you call me?
Yeah, definitely.
Get a hold of me. I would love to go do that.
Definitely.
I miss that guy. I love playing with him.
He's
what
the
a
best
great
dude.
Drummer, too.
He is unbelievable.
Yeah. So what's going on with the band now? That's the band that played on KUTX recently?
Yeah.
Rachel?
Rachel's... my wife, Rachel. Then there's a guy, Greg White. He used to work at, Guitar Center a long time ago, and I met him there when I first moved here. And throughout the years, we kept in touch, and we had like the same music. And
there's something about guys that like pop.
You
know what I mean?
Like kind of hang together.
It's almost like the D&D of rock.
Oh, I know, right?
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. I mean, outside of like the actual D&D music.
Right, right.
We are like the kind of like the nerds of rock.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Like, I mean, I have a hard time trying to play the cool card or something. You know, I'm just like, I'm a dork. I wear my heart on my sleeve.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not anything. I am who I am, and I'm fine with that. And just with my music, you can kind of hear what it is that I'm, hopefully it sort of reflects how I am, you know. Hopefully that's what music does sometimes for people.
How do you, when you play with your wife,
mm-hmm.
how do you separate personal, professional?
Oh, well,
because music's so passionate, and that's, you know what I mean.
Well, there's a lot of ways to look at it.
Stevie Lindsey situation.
What it came out for me is that if I'm going to have anybody sort of buy into it and have a good time with it and not be against me, I'm going to have them involved.
Yeah.
So I asked her if she wanted to be involved with it, and she didn't know how to play at the time. And I helped her out learning stuff. And I think she now has a new skill, or she has that skill, and she's really just enjoys playing.
That's great.
So it turned out not so much of a all these weird dynamics. It comes out more of like we both now have hobbies, and they're combined, where it just flows together.
Right.
So I think we both see it that way. And whenever I go to a show, she's at a show. And we have the same experiences.
Where's your son?
he's playing the tambourine on the bottom. Man. No, he's not.
Has he gone to see any music yet?
Not.
Not even like Central Market?
Yeah. He's actually, I played at the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah.
Every once in a while I do that. And Rachel brings him by, and of course he wants to run to the drum set and try to hit it and stuff. Well, you know, I think, let's see, oh yeah, a sitter brought our kid also one time back when we had the whole band out there at the farmer's market.
Oh, that's cool.
And so he wanted to play with all the stuff, because that's like the room he's not really supposed to go into,
right?
Only because it's just so much stuff, and he could sort of just get on the drums and kind of hit something and bring the whole thing down on him and stuff.
Yeah.
But he sees me hitting on him, and he sees me playing with the guitar, and so he starts playing, and it's always so cute and really cool to watch him do that stuff. But yeah, he's pretty cool.
What do you do you feel weird like when you don't see him all day?
Like from work and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think the key is to have that sort of break, and then you can give them a whole full love fest, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's a pretty nice situation to actually to have that sort of break, and then on the weekends you get them 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then take them for bike rides, take them swimming, you're ready to go, and then here comes work on Monday.
You take them
daycare, they're teaching them stuff.
What does your wife do?
She's a PA at dermatology.
Okay.
Up in Spicewood Springs area. So dealing with faces and zits and stuff like that, moles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we take our turns with the boy. Just I drop him off. She picks him up. Blah blah blah. You know.
Yeah.
Share activities and stuff like that. But we're having a good time. It's great.
That's good, man.
And we waited till I'm 42.
Okay.
She's almost my age. And we waited a little while to have a kiddo. But I think it's a pretty good time for it, because we've gotten to do a lot of things. You know, with the band, we got to do a lot of things. And there's no regrets with that.
No.
You know, sometimes people, that stuff happens.
Exactly, exactly.
And then you're like, great.
I never did this.
Right.
So you played at China Festival.
Yeah, I can always say that. I have a little story for him later on.
How you played like festival in Spain and like?
Yeah. So little did I know that Sonic Big's thing actually worked every once in a while. So, but I think with China, it worked out pretty well. I know a lot of people submitted for it, but at the same time, it's so hard to get all the paperwork through, and we were pretty diligent about getting the passports for everybody. They have to have proof of all this stuff before you can actually
submit to the thing.
Yeah,
right,
before you can actually make it.
They're wasting their time. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, had all that stuff. Then you also have to do these sort of visa things, and you have to submit your lyrics to them, make sure that you're not going to cause a
pussy riot.
A riot or something. Yeah, yeah. Of course, none of my stuff is like that. So, all this weird stuff. And then finally it gets through. Then you have to wait for their government to write back and say, okay, you're checked off, blah, blah, blah. And then so after you get that going. So probably that really narrowed down a lot of the odds. But at the same time, they seem to like us a lot. So we ended up going. And there's a band, I don't know if you heard of Travis.
Yeah, of course. I actually know those guys.
Oh, really? Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go up to Fran Healy, mm-hmm. but I was too kind of freaked out because I like them a lot. I always kind of do that with my heroes. I ran into what's his name from the Shins, Mercer, uh-huh. and James Mercer, and he's at the elevator. I was right by him at the elevator, and I don't even know what to say, so I just turned around and just took off. But anyway, yeah, Travis played there, and that was our biggest festival that we played. We played like in front of maybe like 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And I mean, Travis played amongst probably like 10,000 people or something like that. But it was such a crazy thing.
You know, I met them through some friends, but it was January of 2000. So like, the Man Who hadn't even really come out here.
Really?
But they were doing really well in England or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we had these friends in this band called Remy Zero. Mm-hmm. You know that band?
Yeah.
So our band was in Los Angeles looking for a manager. Hmm. And we kind of had these... my band did a record that Jack Joseph Puig mixed.
Oh, okay.
And so he introduced me to the guys from Remy Zero. Then we ended up becoming friends. And then they were kind of hosting Travis while they were in LA. And mm-hmm. so we all ended up kind of hanging out for a week. It was so funny because as the nights went on and we would, you know, stay up really late at night drinking, it was very weird. It was Remy Zero, Travis, my band, Twiggy Ramirez, Lars Ulrich, Jerry Cantrell, and this director named Jonas Åkerlund, who did like Smack My Bitch Up and you know those videos? Any video that was banned in the late 90s and early 2000s, he did.
Wow.
And anyway, we didn't know those dudes very well at all. I remember one night we were really wasted and this guy Dougie was telling us a story about, like, he was like, you know, the craziest thing ever happened. And this guy's saying, oh, the craziest thing ever happened. Lars, like, oh, when, you know, Ozzy knew my name or whatever. And then these guys were like, dude, check this out. We were in a hotel, like, about to play a gig. Mm-hmm. And we're, like, sitting in our hotel room. And Paul McCartney was going to be on a talk show. And we're like, oh, fuck yeah, let's all watch this. You know, McCartney's going to be on before we go to the gig. Mm-hmm. They're watching him. And finally, at the end of the thing, the dude's like, the host guy's like, so is there anything you're listening to now? He's like, oh, yeah. Got a guitar? McCartney picks up a guitar and starts playing Why Does It Always Rain on Me.
Oh.
And those dudes were like, wait a minute. And that's when we were like, wait a minute, so who are you? And I remember going to the airport to fly back to Texas and picking up a Q magazine and they were on the cover.
Oh,
and
I was my like, gosh.
Oh, that's those dudes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Man. Pretty wild.
Man, that was their sort of peak time, I think, too.
Yeah.
That was probably their biggest song, too. I mean, they have...
Definitely. They had that Sing... Remember?
Yeah,
Sing. I saw them and hung out with them here. Because they played with Remy Zero.
Okay.
Here. Like a year after that or something.
Yeah. I caught them at the La Zona Rosa when it was open.
Oh, yeah.
And they had this, you know, Jason Faulkner.
Mm-hmm.
And he opened up for them. And they sort of dragged Jason Faulkner around with them. And Jason, back when the iPod was
he was doing those sets with the iPods.
Yeah. I was hoping for more, but at least what they did was the last song that Jason would play She Goes to Sleep or something like that. Right. And Travis would get on the stage and play with them. And it sounded amazing. That's the way it needs to be. So. Yeah. But, you know,
it's hard to tour with the band. I mean, look, you got this computer job. You mm-hmm. make records that are fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And you have songs and movies and on mm-hmm. TV.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't take your guys out for 2 weeks on the road.
I can't tour, yeah. I mean,
sorry, only... I'm not screaming at you.
No, it's all right. I feel the same. Yeah, that's why the whole these little China festival and the Spain thing. That's why that was my other way of going. Is that, well, if we get into that, then we could spend a week and a half, and then they can China. They paid for like most of all the expenses and everything. Oh, really? Like that. So that worked out. And Spain, we pretty much almost broke even, not quite.
Still great. Did you do some other shows when you were there?
Yeah, so we tried to milk it all we could. Well, in China, I didn't have a whole lot of choice, but we did two, one in Beijing and one in Shanghai. So it was like day after day. And they treated us like we didn't deserve it. I mean, in my head, like, I've never been treated that way, so.
I know, but how quickly do you get used to that? You know what I mean? Like, you're always playing these shit gigs, but the second you have, like, people carrying your shit the day after, right, when you're back to carrying your own, you're like, what the fuck? Where are the people?
I know, right?
It's very easy to get used to.
I could see that, but I mean, you could definitely get cocky and just kind of, oh, yeah, of course I'm going to get
some. But it's not even so much cockiness. Uh-huh. It's that it actually does ease your thing into...
It does. It's because it's
not stressing you out those for the time that you have to be on stage, because also, to go on there clean feeling.
You almost have to be sort of confident, and that helps with the confidence too. It's almost people taking you to a place and you're there to perform, and people giving you what it is that you might need to be able to perform, as far as, you know, just helping you out, keeping you comfortable and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then you sort of own that, and then you get up on the stage and you just do it, you know. So yeah, it all kind of works together. So that was neat. I mean, I could get used to that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was a little bit, I don't know if I could actually do that for very long. I really like just being in my room trying to write a song and recording it. I mean, all the other stuff is nice and everything, but, and I can't say that I would end up...
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're not so much of a ham as you are just a maker of things.
Yeah. I like to tinker. I like to be in a room kind of like you have here and just,
yeah,
you know, play with stuff. You know?
I'm two people. I do like performing. I get something out of it.
Yeah.
It's not like when I was 14... where like it was like heroin or something. Like I was like, right, as soon as I get off stage, I just be like, I need to be in a room where everybody's looking at me and
right,
like just cheering every time I do something. I need this. But that's changed. But I do get something out of it. It's a lot different. It uh-huh, develops, doesn't it? It changes as you get older.
Oh, definitely. I think the more you changes, do it, yeah, it's like you're on one of those, what is it? There used to be this TV show. It was like a reality show, but people were afraid of, like, basically, I think it was called Addiction or something like that, or maybe it was something else.
Intervention.
Yeah.
Or Hoarders.
No, it was something like, for example, one of them was like, this lady couldn't get on the freeway. And
phobias?
Yeah, phobia. It's a bunch of phobias.
Awesome.
And then, so it was about how they can actually get to the point to where they could drive on the freeway again. And so what they would do is, they'd have a scale between 1 to 10, how they felt, like how nervous they were, and then, or anxious they were. And then, so you drive on the feeder road. I feel like a 5 anxiety level. Then you get them closer to the freeway or closer to that entrance and stuff like that. Or actually, someone else drives and they're in the driver's seat on the passenger seat.
Okay.
And then they feel like a 7 or 8.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then anyway, they finally get to the point to where they're driving and they feel like a 10, and then, and you know, in a less crowded area, say it's at night or something like that, and then during rush hour, and then finally getting them down to the point to where it's like a 5 and a 4, and then it's like a 3, and then they can actually do it. Yeah. So anyway, what I'm getting at is that there was no way I could be on stage when I was first doing this stuff, and I sucked awful.
Yeah.
And then so I've been doing it forever, and it's like writing a song too. You write sucky songs, like 10 billion of them, and then finally, after you've just been hammering this crap out for as long as you could do, then you end up, for one thing, on the stage, you get a little bit better at it, and you don't end up like sweating like crazy and just feeling crazy. And then writing songs, you end up actually writing a halfway decent tune after like 100.
Yeah.
So now it's like, I'm still not great at like public speaking or anything like that, but if I have to go in a meeting at work in a conference room or something like that and have to speak my mind, I'm 10 times better than I was when I was younger because of the whole
performing.
Yeah.
Like some people that are professionals go into stand-up comedy in a hobby way to lose that.
Oh, that so makes sense.
When they hold meetings, they're not nervous.
That makes sense a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they're funny.
Yeah.
Do you think they are?
Probably not, but...
Oh, I wrote down a note. I liked that video with the old footage. When we were young.
Yeah.
That's so that's gathered footage.
That's my wife's grandfather, Donald Miller. He passed away a couple years ago, and he carried the Super 8 film of camera with him wherever, you know, at that time, and he had all this footage, and we found it, and then we took it to the store and digitized it. And then we just had it sitting on the hard drive, and I wrote that song for that last album, and I was just trying to figure out what would go with it. But it has this looking back in time kind of feel to it, and then I thought of that Super 8 film and just put it together. It's hard to make with that film. It's hard to make it look bad because Super 8 just has this quality to it.
It has a feeling.
Yeah, it does.
It takes you to a place that totally touches you.
That's the thing with analog, that it captures, like it takes
How
along
does
with
it. Do that?
I don't know. It's like a physical world thing. I don't know. It's like sometimes when you take all these digital pictures, which I do too, because it's easy and convenient.
Yeah.
But when you have a little painting up here, like on your wall.
Yeah.
Like,
my mom painted that when she was pregnant with me.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really pretty. So it's all these things just really stick out, you know, that someone actually put a little effort into, you know. Sometimes digital stuff just, you can take shortcuts to get places, and you sort of notice that. Now with music, you can just have Pro Tools and everything like that. But you do notice when people actually take the time out and really just do it the right way, sort of.
I noticed with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
like I respond to music.
Yeah.
It's the kind of music I like. I mean, I'm going to listen to you with an open mind more than I would something that I would initially not. And I've had, you know, been faced with that sort of thing on this show.
Right. Well, there's a lot of stuff out there for sure. And you can't.
There really is a lot of stuff, and it's tough to navigate, and it's cool that you have the cool to sit back, and you're more concerned with making good art than if you're gonna... There's something about when you're able to take the financial pressure off of it, because it should be fun to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the deal is, I always looked at it as a secondary thing that I could probably enjoy better if I didn't depend on it so much. And so...
It's interesting because I know people that are just killing themselves that would kill to get any of the placements that you got. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They would take their eyeballs out. And they're also the same people that would quit their job the day that they got it, not even knowing what's coming back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a practical side to you. Like, well, you've got a kid, you know, you're not going to fuck around right now.
I've been that way for a long time because my parents didn't have a whole lot of money. And... I moved out of my house right when I graduated high school, and then I lived on food stamps and stuff like that when I was going to college, and I paid my way through
it. You supported yourself. Yeah. You know what it's like, and you know how to get out of it.
Yeah, my brain doesn't allow me to put myself in a situation to where I can't survive, like, as far as having a job or some fashion.
Yeah. I'm kind of like that.
So I have to have... Like,
if it comes from being poor when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Like that, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, definitely.
You're just like, I know that I don't have to do that. And it does make it very hard, especially if you have a family, let alone just being like a dude.
Right.
But like not being able to, I mean, not like I live in some luxurious situation, but I'm able to take care of myself. I know that I will live here tomorrow.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just that security. And then, you know, you and I'm probably speaking the same way as you would think, is you almost have to have music to kind of to be sane.
Yeah.
So it's also therapy at the same time. So you have to have it in there. And if you end up doing it, then you end up just going to other steps and recording it. And then finally you might have some recordings, and then you end up seeing what you can do with them. And so it's just like an extra add-on.
It's interesting because you must be a natural, because you kind of came out of the gate knowing what you're doing. Because, I mean, I listened to that Bolden today, and that's a great album.
Yeah, that was...
There's nothing like... It's your second album?
That was my first album. That was the first thing I tried to do as a... As a dude. Yeah, as a dude.
As a jammer.
I was a jammer, no. I had that little 4-track recorder thing. I didn't record all that off of that, but I ended up redoing the stuff on, like, Pro Tools. But when I was writing those songs, I started out just in my room doing 4-track recordings, and I played all the instruments. And then, you know Mark Hallman.
Of course. That's my guy. Like, that's my mentor. My mom was friends with him when I was a kid.
Oh,
he's the guy that told me, when he said, what do you want to do, when I was 13, I was like, I think I'll be a musician or an actor. And he was like, I don't be an actor, dude, be a musician. And then he was like totally pro. So sorry, go ahead.
No, for sure.
You know, I did hear about you a long time ago from him.
It's been a while. I think 2007 is when that album came out, so it's probably been a while. But yeah, just I was looking up producers because I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in what I was doing as far as production. I didn't know if I was doing things right. So I thought maybe I could sound better if I go to other people, you know.
Yeah.
Or at least be some sort of mentor or check, you know, you need to do this.
Yeah.
You're doing this wrong. Things are in the red.
Yeah.
Turn it down.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was kind of similar where we hooked into him because he's such a sweet guy.
He's got a good big brother.
Yeah, big brother attitude. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, geez, like, you don't even know. Like, I used to call him. I lived in the woodlands outside of Houston, and he lived up here, and he was, you know, totally a pro guy. And I would call him and be like, hey, so I'm playing guitar through my amp, but it's not going chung, 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 chung. How do I do that? And he's like, oh, yeah, you need a distortion. Like, literally, things like
that.
Right,
like, right. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And his studio over there, the Congress House.
I lived there.
You did? Wow.
Yeah. In like 91 to like 93.
Man.
Yeah, 2 years.
That's a cool place.
It's a very cool place. It was a cool place to live. He's a cool dude. You know, he's the guy that interviewed me for this show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had him be the guy.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. He's a very special guy. His episode's really cool because he's such an interesting story.
Yeah, he's recorded everybody.
You know, they're making a documentary about him.
Oh, yeah. I would like to see that.
Yeah. I just saw a preview of it because the lady sent it out, and I'm so foul mouthed. Like, I'm in it for like 3 seconds, and I say fuck like 4 times.
I know you didn't. You notice that after you like play it back. You don't really notice it when you're doing it,
dude. I notice it. I notice it now because like the other night, I just did like my 400th episode, and I went on a radio to talk about it, and it was such a conscious effort because now I'm just like here doing this thing, and I'm like fuck this, fuck that. Whatever, you know, I had to police myself.
Yeah, I sometimes do that too. I'll say some cuss words and it just feels like I'm just feeling at time or something like that. Then I listen back on it and I go, that's just kind of uncalled for, even though, you know, it feels good doing it, but
yeah. So, wait, you're going to be playing... Are you playing a solo show?
Yeah, at the Empire Place.
Okay. The Empire Place. Saturday, September 19th, at Empire Control Room.
Yeah, they just asked me if the band could play, but we didn't have everybody available, so I said I can pull off a solo thing if you'd like.
Do you do that much?
No, not really, but I'll do it every once in a while. I didn't finish the whole band thing, but I got Rachel on the bass and Josh Kaplan on one of the guitars, and then we have a new addition is Greg White on the other guitar, and they sort of take turns playing leads and rhythm. And I got to the point to where I used to play electric and acoustic. I'd swap the do the whole switcheroo thing, and it's not worth it because things fall out of tune, and you just like you got two guitars to deal with all the time, and one's anyway for me anyway. And so I just stick to acoustic because I could sort of just concentrate on performing.
Yeah.
And
being the front man.
Being the front man and stuff like that. So that's working out great, and it makes the sound full whenever you need it. And then Daniel Jones is on the drum. So anyway, what I was getting at is that Greg is going to play along with me as I play the acoustic.
Okay, cool.
So it's going to be
duo action.
Yeah, and he sings harmonies, so it'll be interesting. I mean,
no dates in stone for the band?
Well, actually, we got Lambert's, but that's in November 13th.
Okay, well, keep your eyes out. People can go to wiretreemusic.com.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And it's a pretty rich website. You can find out all you need to know.
Yeah.
Pick up music, listen to music.
Yeah.
You've got a SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yep.
You're out there.
We're out there.
Yeah. Is there anything I'm missing, Kevin?
I don't think so.
It's been
so.
Really nice meeting you, man.
Same here,
It's
John.
Always nice to meet like-minded dudes. I love your music a lot. I'm glad that Holman worked on your album.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, he
produced Mr. Rockababy.
Did he really?
Yep.
Wow.
He sure did.
Maybe that's how
we just reunited.
Really?
After 20 years of not, more than 20 years of not talking.
So what's, are you going to?
No. That was a thing. It was done. That was not a band of best friends.
I see.
Yeah. But we did a good job of, I mean, it was weird because I thought, I was real confused. I didn't realize people were just kind of doing it to do it.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, well, this maybe it'll be a thing where you can leave it better than you found it.
Right.
Emotionally.
Right.
Like, these people that hate me. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And it worked out great with one guy, but there was another guy who wouldn't give me his number or anything. It was just weird. And he hung out, like, with the other two dudes, but without me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The bands, they're like little relationships.
If you're young, we were so young, you know. We were 20, I was 24.
Yeah.
I'm a totally different dude now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, Holman did that, so I'm glad that you guys worked together. And so, Lambert's?
Lambert's, yeah, November 13th. We play there, that's pretty much our go-to place.
I like that place.
And we play probably every 2 to 3 months. And that's our deal ever since the baby came. But it actually works out great. There's a lot more people that show up that way. And we have a lot more fun playing it, you know, waiting that long.
Yeah.
So it's cool. So, yeah, November 13th is our next one.
Okay.
So.
Well, there's nothing else I'm missing. People go to wiretreemusic.com, find out what's going on, look at the pictures.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody cares, there's I'm going to plan on putting out 3 more songs, and it's probably going to be like a month after month thing, and probably as it gets closer to like November, December time, maybe ramping up till Christmas kind of thing.
Okay.
So that's the plan.
And I'm going to play that song that you sent me in its entirety at the end.
Sure,
so
that's
that
fine.
Way people get, I love it. What's it called? I'm sorry.
It's called Let It Go.
Let It Go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
Seriously, when you do the home slice with Daniel,
we will have some pizza.
I want to go.
Pizza and Daniel.
Yeah, I missed that, dude. Tell him I said
some Daniel stories.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes. Yeah. Kevin Peroni and his great band, Wire Tree. What a great band, man. That's the song Get Up from their album, Get Up, that came out a couple of years ago. You can find Wire Tree at wiretreemusic.com. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud. Fantastic band. Great conversation with Kevin. Get out there and pick up all their albums, especially their Bolden, their re-release. And we have a special song coming up in just a second, Let It Go. Debut Wire Tree song right here on How Did I Get Here? Exclusive. Thanks to Kevin for letting us play it for you for the first time. So listen, while you're out there checking out Wiretree on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, and wiretreemusic.com, don't forget that you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy. I want to thank you all for listening to this show. I want you to have a great weekend. Yeah, have a great weekend. Some of you guys going down to Float Fest this weekend? Gonna float? Float the river? Watch the jams? What you doing? All right. Hey, thank you so much for listening to the show. Here is a new song by the band Wire Tree. Unreleased. How Did I Get Here exclusive. Let It Go. Thank you to Kevin Peroni for coming on the show and letting us use this song. All right. All you guys have a great weekend. Let's get down. I was headed.
Getting old, don't let me down. I'll build up myself some memories to pass along with the friends I see along the way. I'll be okay.